When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
You are listening to the Women's Podcast, brought to you by Green and Black's Organic Chocolate. Chocolate to savor. You're listening to the Irish Times Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. Today we're going to be talking about what it's like to parent alone during a pandemic. It's a really interesting subject because those of us with kids where there's two parents or two guardians know how challenging it's been. But listening to the perspective of someone who has done it alone, well, that is really sobering.
We want just as much as anybody else wants, and we have plenty of drive, determination and motivation because we are the only ones to answer to these small people. We have a lot of pressure on us to keep it together. There's nobody else. Like, I can't go into another room and get upset or feel scared about the pandemic. You know, I'm like, it's fine. We'll get through this. We'll figure it out.
That was Claire there, who you're going to hear later on in the episode. It's Monday, 29th of June, and it feels like a very seismic day with lockdown being lifted. We can travel around Ireland. We can go on holidays in Ireland. We can get our hair done, which is what I'm doing today. I can't wait. People are seeing relatives and friends they haven't seen for ages. And I know I said I wasn't doing any queuing for shops, but I did succumb. And somehow I ended up yesterday in a very long queue for Decathlon. And I'm actually not sorry. It was a great experience. I only got one thing, a T-shirt for my holidays, and the girls got a bit of gear, and I would really like to see their sales figures because there was lots and lots of empty shelves and huge queues, and people seem to have been descending on it. And most of the things I had spied on the website and done my research on were not there, including one of those towel poncho yokes so you can avoid doing the Irish beach changing clothes jig when you're trying to get out of your swimsuit. So just a warning, Decathlon is amazing, but it's under siege and they might not have the stuff you want. But sure, go ahead anyway. It's a bit of a laugh. And they serve coffee and hot chocolate, which I didn't realise. So that's interesting. Anyway, back to today's episode. During the pandemic, single parents have faced many issues, from shopping, with many stores banning children at the start of lockdown and ignoring the government's advice to use the common sense approach. Loneliness, having no other adult interaction within the home, can get really relentless in lockdown. And we know from the 2016 census that one in four families with children in Ireland is a one-parent family. That's according to the census from 2016. And the people at lone parent organisation One Family have reported an 84% increase in calls to lone parents' helplines during lockdown. The increase comes as parents seek support on new and challenging issues that have arisen since restrictions began. So on this conversation, I spoke to Niamh Wynne, who's from One Family. She coordinates their New Steps and New Futures programme. She also does one-on-one work with parents. And one of those parents is telling her that they were already in crisis and that COVID-19 was just another challenge on top of the ones she already faced. And Claire O'Leary lives in Wexford. She has one five-year-old son called Peter, and she's a single parent since her son was about 7 months old, and she's now going in to second year of a psychology degree in Waterford Institute of Technology. I started by asking Claire about her own situation and about what life has been like in lockdown?
So it started basically, I was working in the UK and I found out I was pregnant with my partner. We moved back from the UK. And when my son was born, he was about 8 months old, that we went kind of our separate ways. So I've pretty much been a single parent from about 7, 8 months old. And we moved into our own place. Anyway, the father wasn't as awfully present in those 7 months anyway. So I kind of felt like I've been a lone parent this entire time. It was nothing kind of different for me. But when we moved back and we had to change our whole kind of life, and I had to kind of change my mindset that I'd be doing everything on my own. My parents were amazing, incredibly supportive, backed me up all the way. So I found I had the best support ever. They've just been there for me from the word go.
And Claire, you know the way you said you had to change your mindset. So when you were pregnant and when you were in the relationship, I presume like lots of people in relationships were pregnant, the way you think your life is going to pan out is a very particular way. You don't kind of think, well, I'll be on my own. So did you really, was that a big land for you? And was that something that took a lot of adjustment?
It was and it wasn't, because when I was about 8 months pregnant, my partner at the time turned around to me one day and said, kind of, if we weren't together when this child was born, if we broke up, he said he wouldn't be that interested in being together. So yeah, in his mind, it was very much like all in, all out. So I was like, I kind of got a land at about 8 months, but I just knew then, you know, you're 8 months pregnant. You're kind of like, well, you're kind of in now, you know, like it's going to happen. So I think from about there, I knew that I'd probably be doing it on my own. And I was okay with it because I knew I was coming back to Ireland. And I was like, look, I have the support of great parents. I have 5 siblings. You know, they've all been great and very supportive of me. And I've gotten loads of support off my friends and stuff as well. So it wasn't as big a deal as I thought it would be.
Okay, but I suppose you were also dealing with the breakup of a relationship and being a mother for the first time. Those are two quite big events.
Exactly, exactly. And I suffered with postnatal depression and wasn't diagnosed until I was about six months after he was born. So I had a 6-month-old, and I remember like cleaning my house top to bottom. I had all these sort of obsessive traits. And I went to the doctor, and once I started the medication, I have never felt as well in my life. So like, even since I was probably a teenager, I've never felt as well. So that was another thing that kind of got me through a lot of the hard parts of it. But I still am on the medication, but I find it fantastic. I've never felt as well or as motivated or as driven in my entire life.
Brilliant. So let's go back in terms of the first few years, because obviously we're going to talk about being a single parent in lockdown and in that particular, the challenges of that for people on their own with children. But before that, what were the challenges for you? How was life? I know you've loads of support down there in Wexford from your parents, and that's so important. But what did you find difficult and what things did you have to work on?
I think the hardest part of being a single parent definitely would be not the loneliness. A lot of people talk about loneliness, and it's like it's not the kind of stereotypical loneliness you think of. It's like, oh, come over, we'll have a glass of wine, everything will be fine. No, it's the book falls with you. So at the end of the day, if I make a decision to benefit him or what I think might benefit him, or maybe it backfires and it doesn't benefit him, it lies with me. So my child could grow up maybe brattish or, you know, has emotional issues or whatever. It's like I have to be on the ball all the time, because if I don't catch it, no one else does.
Right.
You know, it's even things like bad teeth. Like if I don't keep an eye on brushing his teeth, or something as simple as that, then he ends up with a rotten tooth because nobody else sees it like I see it. I see it in the morning, in the evening, bedtime. I'm always there. It always has to be me.
Yeah, as you're speaking there, I'm thinking of areas in my parenting that I don't really take much involvement in. And teeth is one thing that my partner is much more like on that with them. But I can kind of take a back seat with that bit and I'll do another bit. So you kind of do this tag team thing. But when you're on your own, it's all about the decisions you make and how on the ball you are.
Exactly. And my ex-partner now didn't even bath our son ever, even in those 7 months. And I remember being absolutely terrified holding this newborn baby and shaking and just kind of trying to figure it all out on my own and feeling like, you know, this should be a thing that you want to get involved in. And I never kind of had that. So I suppose you kind of get used to doing it on your own, but it is just that fear at the end of the day that when you put him to bed and he's fast asleep, that you're going, did I do a good job today? Can I tick that box and say, you know, did I do a good job? And can I do better tomorrow?
Yeah, and the thing about when you have a partner, when you make, so we've just made a big decision with the girls in terms of, like, say, schooling, and you kind of make the joint decision and you've both made it. So if it's the wrong decision or you mess up, like, you kind of can go, well, we both did it. Whereas if you do something and you make a decision and you think, oh God, it's wrong, you just have yourself to blame, which is really hard.
It's so tough. That's definitely my thing, that I have a sort of a chip on my shoulder about that one, that I panic about an awful lot. And I'm doing a psychology degree at the moment as well, so that becomes more and more apparent when you see these little traits and stuff that come out, and you're like, that's normal. That's normal. You know, things that he does are very, like, normal. I'm following his development through the psychology course as well, which is fascinating. But I kind of feel like I'm doing okay for now.
Well, it sounds like you are. So listen, let's talk about lockdown then. Let's talk about when Leo Varadkar said, right, that's it, you've got to stay at home, you can't do anything. How was it for you at the very beginning with Peter? Peter is now 5, is that right?
He is, yep. I was absolutely terrified because I went from, say, 4 and a half days a week in Waterford doing my degree. Like, and I went from being away most of the week, as many other people will be working or college, to coming back and being like 24/7 with a small person who is full of questions and needs help with X, Y, and Z. It was a massive kind of wake-up call. I was terrified of doing it on my own, because I would have had that sort of maybe slight backup with my parents and stuff. And I couldn't go into them because they were over 70, they were cocooning. So I had to kind of take a back seat and just, you know, when you feel like you're in control all the time, and this felt like I was very out of control, like it was nothing I could do about it. I just had to sit back and kind of roll with the punches. So yeah, we managed about 2 weeks of like fun and sunshine and this is going to be okay, this is fine. And then they said, oh, another 2 weeks and another 2 weeks. And I was kind of going, oh God, I don't know if I can do this full time. So I just, I got a slightly higher dose of my medication just to make sure that I wasn't rubbing off on them either as well. Like my lack of motivation, you know, sort of down days and stuff, I kind of felt very overwhelmed. So once I did make the conscious decision to up my medication and to be better for him through that, I felt a million times better. I was on cloud 9. Two of us, we got into all sorts.
Claire, that is really interesting to hear you talk about that decision, because, you know, I think it's very astute of you. You obviously know yourself very well, and maybe it's the psychology degree or something, but you obviously realized you were going down a bit and potentially into a space that would be really unhealthy for both you and for your little boy. And you proactively went and got that help. And I think that might be very useful for some people listening, because medication as well gets a bit of a bad rep sometimes, whereas we see that it's the thing that has helped so many people, when many other things, like the things like meditation and yoga and all these things that are supposed to help, and counselling, which obviously do help in some way. But for some people, it's the medication that actually is the best thing. Can you tell me a bit about why you so quickly went and asked for an increase in your dosage and why you felt that was the right thing to do?
I felt in my gut anyway, I felt if it went on kind of longer than the 2-3 weeks that we were initially kind of anticipating, the government said, you know, 2 weeks, we'll kind of wait up on another 2 weeks and stuff. It felt too unknown for me. And I know myself well enough to know that if I don't have sort of a goal or a drive or a motivation in my head, an end game, I get very kind of demotivated, very kind of downbeat as such. So I felt like upping the medication would be a better idea, clearer head. And I did it and I felt great then once I had done it. But it was definitely sort of an option. And the way I see medication anyway, it's not always everybody's option. It's not always something for, like, meditation and yoga can be great for some people. I do some of that as well. And I always watch my diet and different things, and I keep fit, I work out. But at the same time, I strongly believe that it can be sometimes a chemical imbalance, like, you know, that maybe I'm just not topped up enough compared to Tom or Sally. Like, with the medication, I felt like I was a normal person again for the first time in a long time. I felt like I could think, basically. I could think. There was not this sort of fuzzy head of feeling down and no kind of goal. So once I knew that was kind of going to happen again after the 2 weeks, I said, it's not worth it. I don't want my son to wake up every morning and wonder why I can't get out of the bed. I said, I want him to look back on the pandemic times and go, geez, me and mommy had a great time. You know, we did things because I was motivated enough to do it.
So tell me about the distance learning, because that's something a lot of people struggled with. But again, when you have a partner, you can kind of tag team that and somebody can get a bit of work done. Now, you were studying for exams at this time, which I don't even want to think about how I'd have coped with something like that with a small child. So how did that go?
My biggest concern was the fact that with the home learning, like I'd teach him and that was fine, but trying to juggle both, and it was very much in the air whether we'd have exams even. So I was thinking, I need to learn all this information by a certain date to sit down and sit an exam. And I found that nearly impossible with the home learning. But as they changed, and then they went to like a continuous assessment, and I did an assignment for pretty much each module I had left. And I was delighted because I sat him beside me and I ordered a couple of those like ABC sticker books, phonetics, trace drawing. We sat beside each other and I said, right now, school time from 9 till 11. I'd only ever get little sections because I'd never get an awful lot of time out of him to sit down still. But I sat him down and I find that he was a lot more tired at nighttime. He'd sleep better because he's taught more. We have the leapfrog, so he learned a lot from that. And I would do my assignments in those little pockets then as well when he was busy writing things or drawing pictures or painting pictures. It was my saving grace, let's put it that way.
So you've been out of kind of lockdown for a couple of weeks now, have you? You've been able to go and see people and stuff. How have you found that? Has it been an interesting adjustment or has it been just fantastic?
It's been lovely. It has been lovely. We're still quite cautious with the masks and the hand sanitizer because obviously I have elderly parents. So now since we've loosened up, I've been able to come into my parents' house and be with them, and Peter can see his grandparents. It's been amazing, but we're just very cautious because he has little hands. He's 5 years old. He wants to touch everything when we go into a shop. There was a point when they called children vectors. The government called them vectors. And that was terrifying because every time you'd go out or you'd think about going into a shop, you'd get the kind of funny stares or the looks, like people just weren't able for you going into a shop with a small child. You know, they were kind of afraid of children almost. So it's really nice now. It's all kind of relaxed a bit more and we're getting a lot more variety in our day.
Yeah. I'm going to bring Niamh in for a second, but just, are you not surprised that there's been an 84% increase in calls to the helpline for single parents?
No, not at all. Not surprised at all, because I feel like everyone is under pressure. Now, we're the great sort of solidarity there with feeling like we're all in the same boat. But at the same time, everyone is dealing with a different variety of boat as such. You know, it's just, it's like, you know, some people have more financial worries. I didn't necessarily have that because I was in college. I was getting a grant. You know, I didn't have that to think about, but definitely just, you know, caretaking and mental health, sort of keeping yourself upbeat. Mm. So I can 100% see that there was an increase that just needed an out.
You are listening to the Women's Podcast, brought to you by Green and Black's Organic Chocolate. Discover a different kind of dark. So, Niamh, I know you don't work directly on the line, but from what your colleagues have been telling you, what are the kinds of things that people were struggling with, lone parents?
The calls that when I was on the helpline over the last couple of months, a lot of questions around access, a lot of questions around maintenance. I suppose with the access, it's people were scared. I mean, around the country, if you had children, just say in the rural counties where there's people could be living 50 miles apart or whatever, they were concerned about their children going to see their children, fathers wanting to go to see their children, wanting to know, is it okay for their children to go to their houses, missing their kids, the kids missing them. I mean, a lot of single parents, lone parents can work very well together and they have good setups, but a lot of them became scared because they didn't really know what they were supposed to be doing. For example, if you've got somebody who is parenting alone, would a child has a number of children, but one of them has special needs and that child has now got no support. Then you've got your other children home as well. You're doing the homeschooling and while also trying to look after the child with additional needs, you need support. And so the mental health around that was massive. And it still is. I mean, it's just trying to manage and want to know that they're doing the right thing. the isolation, like lung parents were isolated before COVID. Do you know what I mean? So they know what isolation is, and there's a big difference with the loneliness and the isolation. You really realize I'm on my own here. Maintenance. In some cases, people were seen using the COVID as an excuse, but maybe not to pay maintenance and stuff like that, not being able to get to the courts. The homeschooling was a huge thing as well, because you have people who suddenly were finding themselves at home. They didn't have all the right equipment. They didn't have their IT skills weren't up to what they thought they should be. If you've got two or three children all in different classes, trying to get the stuff done, the pressure was huge. Is it okay to go out to the shops? What do I do if I need to go to the shops? I can't bring the kids with me. This is at the beginning. You can't leave them on their own. So what do you do? So buying, like, you know, doing your shopping online, and then Tesco's not delivering for a week and a half later. Stuff like that. And the isolation and practical stuff. Yeah, definitely. I mean, a huge increase from all over the country.
Yeah, it's 84% is huge. But the other thing that you're involved in then is, it was a thing that was offline before this, which is helping people get back into work and things like that. So tell us a bit about the program and how you transitioned when the pandemic happened to making it work online for you. What is called New Futures, New Steps, or New?
Yeah, so we were in two courses, New Steps and New Futures. So New Steps is like an 8-week program. It's like a precursor to the New Futures. Like, it's a personal development program, and it takes little snippets of the New Futures program, condenses into 8 weeks. And we would hope that the people who do New Steps progress on to do New Futures. That's normally what happens. About half of our participants would go on to do New Futures, and then we recruit the rest. It's an employability program. It's a back to education and employability program. It's aimed at women from early 20s up to mid 50s. All have experienced being lone parents, but they're isolated from the job market and they've been at home with their children. They're educated. Some would have maybe done a junior cert. Some haven't done a junior cert. And some could have college education, but haven't worked in 15 years. So when they come into us and we do the needs assessment, one of the most important questions that I think we ask is, what do you want to do? What is it that you want to do? And then we ask, what is your dream job? You know, and when you ask that question, they go, my dream job, sure. Like, it's too late for me. No, it's not. It's really not, you know. And we go through their transferable skills. A lot of times they'll say, well, I haven't worked for, like, just say 10 years. So I haven't done anything. And you go, no, you have worked. You've worked at home for 10 years. So what are the skills that you've learned doing that? And they go, no, I don't know. And then we actually start to say, well, who looks after your finances? Who manages your household? All of that stuff. So when they start on the program, they do a personal journal, which is really important for their learning as well. The personal development piece covers their communication style, their values, their self-esteem, their confidence, their supports. And then the second part, which is after Christmas, is concentrating on exploring career, education and stuff like that. One of the things they identify is supports. We all need support. So there's lots of organisations and places out there that say, we support people, or people in your life that say, oh, I'll support you. But when it comes down to it, who really supports you? And being able to name who the supports are, because it kind of dwindles down, do you know what I mean? And you only actually need a few of those, but you need good ones. So we work really closely with them around that, and everybody identifies different ones. And my God, was that a lifesaver when COVID happened, because they had to lean into their support big time. And I suppose, I know there's a lot of people talking about isolation and loneliness around COVID, and it's absolutely true. We were in the middle of the course, and they were coming in 2 mornings a week, 3 hours on Monday, 3 hours on a Tuesday, working as a group. Suddenly, they're all at home, they're parenting alone, and I'm like, oh my God, this, how are we going to finish this? And we had a couple of weeks where we had to decide, what are we going to do? And we were so near the end, and they put so much work in that we had to figure it out. So we started doing Zoom. That was a problem, because some didn't have devices to do it. So we're using telephones and kids' iPads and stuff like that. We had to organize it at a time when the kids weren't homeschooling. Also, kids had to put in front of televisions and bribed and all that kind of stuff. Because a huge part of our program is the one-to-one support they get. So each participant is designated a key worker. So they would link in with that key worker weekly or fortnightly. And any challenges that they're facing outside of the course, whether it's housing, maintenance, all that other stuff that happens for lone parents, we support them with that. There's a lot of telephone work. There was a lot of talking on the phone, supporting people around that. And we started doing Zoom, and they did it. We finished last week and we had a final Zoom session last week. I have all the assignments there. The assignments all were all in. They had to adapt so fast. They did it.
Brilliant.
And, you know, being a lone parent does not define your whole life. You know what I mean? You're able, like, we have people who have been accepted onto the Trinity Access Program recently. We've people attending interviews on Zoom now. We've people going on to further education, applying for scholarships. And they're keeping going. They don't know what's going to happen in September or when they're going to start. And that is down to their resilience and down to their motivation. Lone parents are not lacking in motivation. They're not lacking in motivation. It's the self-confidence and self-esteem. Mm. And it's the world outside that kind of tells them this story about themselves. And it's about their self-belief.
Claire, you're nodding away during Niamh talking there. You obviously relate to what she's saying in terms of, I suppose, attitudes to lone parents, but also what the resilience that you have.
Yes, the motivation. Like it is like we have plenty of motivation because you have these little eyes looking up at you and you're the only one. You're looking around going, there's nobody else. Like it is me, like that they're looking at, and they're expecting certain things to happen or routines to happen. And the pandemic kind of just threw that all off, out of whack. And like, I don't know what's going to happen. So how can I portray to him that life is going to be okay, everything's going to be fine, and explain to him why he can't hug his granny and granddad and stuff? But I found just complete and utter honesty. I would stick to that rule across the board anyway, but as long as I was always honest with him, it's like, you know, if we go out, if we touch things, you see, and if we bring it back, then granny and granddad might get sick. So we have to just be very careful, and we just can't hug them for the time being. So a little bit of just awareness for him as well. So I found that the motivation and stuff is there. It was just because it was so unknown. It was trying to keep that motivation was the little bit of a struggle.
So I was wanting to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Claire, about sort of stigma towards lone parents from the past, that, you know, that the idea of women who were rearing children, particularly women, because it used to be only women. And obviously, as we know now, there are a lot more men also doing the same thing. But that stigma, if it still exists, and also kind of if it does, what would you like to tell people listening about the experience of being lone parents? Assumptions that people might make, you know, and things you'd like people to know.
I think there is probably a bit of a stigma there, definitely. I say probably, but I mean definitely. From a point of view where people do kind of look at you in a certain way and maybe expect you only to want so much out of life, or maybe I'm just quite happy with maybe a little house or, you know, a nice TV or a nice-ish car. But what they don't realise is that we want just as much as anybody else wants, and we have plenty of drive, determination and motivation because we are the only ones to answer to these small people. We have a lot of pressure on us to keep it together. There's nobody else. Like, I can't go into another room and get upset or feel scared about the pandemic. You know, I'm like, it's fine, we'll get through this, we'll figure it out. You know, there is no one else. So I find that the stigma, I think, is slowly dying, definitely, because you've plenty of lone parents out there who are kind of turning against the sort of stereotype. And even like myself, I'm getting a degree in psychology. I wouldn't be able to do it now if I didn't have my dad, mine and my son after play school and stuff. So there are a big shout out to the grandparents and the carers and stuff. Like, you wouldn't be able to afford the childcare in order to go back and get a degree to better our lives. But they play a big part. But definitely, I think the stigma is, it's old fashioned. It's pretty much on its way out, because I think a lot more people are becoming more determined and showing that they're braver and stronger than we ever thought. So all you need is a few people like that, and then you kind of go, oh, she's a lone parent, she's doing all that, wow, fair play, you know. So
Niamh, what about you in terms of what you hear about stigma, and then also things you'd like people to know about the great job that so many lone parents around the country are doing?
I definitely have worked with people who believe that there's a stigma out there. But I think more what it is a lack of understanding and knowledge, you know what I mean, that people have. I mean, you, me, and everybody else out there needs support in our lives at some stage in our lives. So if it's okay for the rest of society to ask for support, why is it difficult for lone parents? Why are they different? They're not any different. They just need different types of support. They're well able to get on with things. They're well able, they have to work twice as hard probably. People might not like to hear that because it sounds like you're going to look for me. They're not. The fact is, if you're on your own looking after children, anybody who's a parent knows that's a difficult job. On your own, it's doubly difficult. And I think as a society, if we were able to embrace, you know, the understanding a bit more and just go, look, we all deserve a fair shot at this. But yeah, I do think that some people, and this affects people's beliefs about themselves then, because they think that this is how society sees them. The colleges are all trying to, you know, open up and sort of give more support. And there is support. Some of the colleges are amazing, just say for people who are going on to further education, but they're not all there yet. And this is where I would say that, yeah, it's great to say, yeah, we want to support these people. And my question to them is, well, how are you going to do that? Have you asked them what the supports are that they need? And are you willing to give those supports? Because if those supports were given, I can guarantee you people will flourish. Like anybody does when they're supported.
Well, I think even the conversation today has been very eye-opening for me. And I take my hat off to you and to everyone else who's doing this on their own. Because I think what you said is so important, Eve. Like, we all need help. Like, everybody, people in couples need help, people who are together, lone parents. But it's kind of nice to sort of look at things from other people's perspectives as well. I hope it's made listeners realize how difficult it would be on your own and to not have that other person to bounce off. But it sounds like, Claire, you're doing a wonderful job for Peter. He's a lucky boy. And if you have any final words there, just for your hopes for the future and kind of where your life is going to go, Claire.
Well, I hope to get my degree in psychology and do a master's and go on and get a nice job and be able to support myself, my son, and see his little face when we move into a nice bigger house that we're not squished into. Things like that. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. And I couldn't do it without my parents, my dad especially. He's been my absolute hero and rock star. So though I might not have reached out for support maybe that Niamh is offering, I do feel like if I didn't have my family, I would definitely go for that support. But I'm really grateful and blessed.
Brilliant. Okay, but both of you, thank you so much for talking to us on the Women's Podcast, and good luck with everything you're doing. Thanks very much to my guests, Niamh Wynn and Claire O'Leary. You can email us on thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. We hope you'll subscribe to the podcast too and tell your friends about it. If you want to find us on Twitter and Facebook, we're on @ITWomen's Podcast. The podcast is produced by me, Roisin Ingle, and by Suzanne Brennan, with JJ Vernon on sound. Our sponsor is Green and Blacks, and thanks very much to them. And take care of yourselves, and thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.